From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Friday, March 21st. I'm Abby Larico. A new South Asian art exhibition is highlighting the challenges many immigrants face living in the U.S.
You feel like it's an endless turmoils that you have to go through and through and through and through. Like one ends, and before that ends, there's another one to deal with.
A conversation with featured St. Louis artist Mijay coming up after this news on The Gateway. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order to further downsize the U.S. Department of Education. Gabrielle Rodriguez, superintendent of the Central School District in O'Fallon, Illinois, says she's worried about the message this sends to educators.
Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, the impact that this is having on all of us and the uncertainty that it is creating, it's really detrimental to our profession.
Roughly 23% of the Central School District's budget came from federal grants in the 2024 fiscal year. And as St. Louis Public Radio's Hiba Ahmed reports, she's one of many St. Louis area education leaders concerned about this change.
Though Trump said that he does not plan to cut funding for low-income students or those with disabilities, education leaders are slamming his decision to dismantle the department. Byron Clemens is a spokesperson for the American Federation of Teachers Local 420, which represents teachers and staff members in St. Louis public schools.
We still think public education is a cornerstone of democracy. Ultimately, this will hurt millions and millions of children.
School districts are largely funded by local and state tax dollars, but according to state education officials, public schools in St. Louis received over $17 million this school year in federal funding. St. Louis County school districts like Rittner received nearly $2 million, while Riverview Gardens received about $4.5 million. I'm Hiba Ahmed, St. Louis Public Radio.
The husband of former Missouri Democratic U.S. Representative Cori Bush is accused of defrauding two programs designed to help businesses get through the COVID-19 pandemic. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C. announced the indictment against Courtney Meritz yesterday. The charges are not connected to Bush's tenure in Congress and are not related to a Department of Justice investigation into her campaign's spending on security, which her husband ran. Meritz allegedly lied on applications for paycheck protection and economic disaster injury loans. He received a total of about $21,000, money he allegedly spent on his own personal benefit. His attorney says in a statement that Meritz will plead not guilty and looks forward to arguing the case in court. The city of Ferguson has reached a major milestone in required reforms to its police department. Chief Troy Doyle unveiled the department's Community Policing and Engagement Plan this week. It's a document that is considered a key pillar to fully implementing a 2016 consent decree with the U.S. Department of Justice. Doyle says departments across the country use the strategies in the plan.
But what's unique about this particular plan is that it's unique for this city because we have gone so long, or too long, I should say, without having a strategic approach to dealing with crime in our community.
The plan has eight key elements. They include Ferguson officers regularly participating in community events and a formal structure for officers and residents to figure out how to tackle problems in the city's neighborhoods. St. Louis police say they've identified the carjacking suspect who was critically injured in a hit-and-run on Interstate 70 on Monday. The SLMPD is not making the 15-year-old's name public because he is a juvenile. He was a passenger in an Acura that fled from police and crashed on eastbound 70 near Shreve. The teen ran from police. An officer was holding him at gunpoint in the express lanes when a Cadillac crashed into them both. The officer has had to have his leg partially amputated. The Cadillac's driver now faces multiple criminal charges. An Illinois bill that would require schools like Freeburg High in the Metro East to change their mascots passed out of House committee yesterday 9-4. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bowers following this.
Freeburg High School in St. Clair County has been known as the Midgets for 90 years. This bill would require public schools with mascots deemed to be discriminatory to those with disabilities to change by 2028. People with dwarfism find the term to be dehumanizing and a slur. Erin Ellswood testified at the committee. Her 7-year-old son has dwarfism.
Schools should not get to decide which disabilities deserve respect. We would never tolerate a school choosing a mascot that targets any other marginalized group, and we should not allow an exception when it comes to disability.
Opponents of the bill say the mascot isn't meant to be offensive, and it's a local issue. The bill now heads to the House floor for debate. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Work is underway to determine if Missouri will qualify for federal disaster relief after last week's tornadoes. Governor Mike Kehoe said yesterday that joint federal and state assessment teams are already reviewing damage to private homes and businesses. Federal officials who arrive next week will focus on damage to public projects like roads and bridges. The surveys are the next step in seeking a federal disaster declaration. The governor has also waived some environmental rules to make cleanup from the storms easier. The storm spun off 12 tornadoes in the St. Louis area, one of the most active outbreaks ever recorded. The strongest originated in Carter County and had top winds of 165 miles per hour. An EF2 storm caused damage in Rolla. The tornado that tore through Chesterfield and Florissant was on the ground for 30 miles. The St. Louis-based company Benson Hill announced that it's seeking Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. STLPR's Eric Schmidt reports the publicly traded ag tech company also wants to change leadership.
Benson Hill was a rising star in St. Louis's ag tech ecosystem, most known for its innovation around adding specific traits to plants, like boosting the protein in soybeans. The company went public in 2021, valued at $2 billion. In court filings, Benson Hill lists just under $140 million in assets and about $110 million in debts. The filings lay out the company's proposal to approve about $11 million in financing from four entities to help with liquidity during the bankruptcy process. The company also proposes to terminate its current CEO, CFO, and Chief Technology Officer, tapping current Administrative Officer Dan Cosgrove to lead the transition. That's all subject to court approval. I'm Eric Schmid, St. Louis Public Radio.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has stripped Tanya Haddix of her license to keep and sell exotic animals for at least 2 years. Haddix had operated Sunrise Beach Safari near Lake of the Ozarks and gained notoriety in the 2024 HBO series Chimp Crazy. She was caught lying to a judge about a chimpanzee named Tonka. That's after agreeing to turn over seven chimps in her care to People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. PETA had complained about the animals' living conditions. Haddix handed over most of the chimps, but claimed Tonka was dead, even though he was living in her basement. In September, Haddix told St. Louis on the air that she thought PETA would be happy relocating just six of the seven chimps.
I underestimated their behaviors, their erratic, crazy behaviors, and I just had no clue that they would have challenged that any further.
Haddix has about a month to file any appeal. A new art exhibit featuring the work of South Asian artists who emigrated to the U.S. is putting a spotlight on the challenges immigrants face. St. Louis Public Radio's Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson spoke to local artist Mijay about her work in the exhibit and how her new identity in the U.S. shaped her art.
I'm standing in Mijay's small home studio, surrounded by her collection of vibrant, handcrafted art. Each piece tells a story about what it's like living in America as an immigrant and the journey to getting to the U.S. Her latest work, Endless, does just that with a depiction of the desert and the ocean.
You feel like it's an endless turmoils that you have to go through and through and through and through. Like one ends, and before that ends, there's another one to deal with.
The pieces will be featured in the Atra art exhibition this month. As she sits down to nurse her adorable three-week-old son, Sahaj, I asked her about the realities of becoming an immigrant.
It's funny, until you move out of something, you don't realize what you were in. So when I came to US, I was like, oh, I am Indian. Because all this while, being Indian was not a thing for me. It wasn't part of my identity, my active identity as such. But only when I came to US did I realize I am an immigrant, not a priority of the US government. And those things, when they strike in, I'm like, oh my God, I am so vulnerable. So when I came here, and that differentness helped me look at my own life, my experiences, my everything, in a very interesting light that even I had not seen. You know, I could see my child as a brown child. Before that, he was just a kid. I could see my husband as not allowed to work in the United States. He was the social media editor in BBC World Service in New Delhi. So, you know, those things when it dawn upon you, when you come, leave your own country for whatever reasons, and then you come to this world, and then you're like, oh my God, all the parameters have been shifted.
Your art is personal, and in many ways it chronicles the journey that is the immigrant experience. Why is it important for you to highlight their stories and even your own story in your work?
There are so many resonances. Our stories reverberate in different tones, but we all have similar stories. I mean, honestly, even I cannot speak how I feel about things. But when you hear somebody else express those words in visual format or in performance that I do, in the text-based installations that I create, it comforts communities. It comforts people who are going through similar struggles as me.
Your work will be featured in the upcoming ATRA art exhibition. What can people expect, and what do you hope people take away from your work?
ATRA is a Sanskrit word. It means here, more of a right now here. And almost all my work talks about being here now. And it's because, you know, we are always like, okay, I have come here. Okay, till now, not yet given up. And that resilience, just reassuring yourself that you're fine, you are here, you have made it till now, you have made it till here, they reappear in my work.
What does it mean to be here in the U.S. at this moment, right now, for you?
Believing in myself, in my ability as an individual, as an artist. It's also setting an example for myself, my children, that difficult times test your strength, and I am strong.
That was St. Louis artist Mijay speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson about the ATRA art exhibition at the Cecile R. Hunt Gallery. The exhibit opens today. Our Jonathan All edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Theme music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway. Have a great weekend.